Welcome to Fit and Chips Chats. This is a podcast for women over 40 who are looking for sane and frank advice about their health and wellness, especially through menopause. I'm Amanda Thebe, the original resilient bitch and menopause guru. In my work as a personal trainer and nutrition coach, and through my own personal experience, it became obvious to me information about menopause and this curious phase of our life was so ridiculously hard to find. And that's why I started this podcast. Join me every week as I speak to health and wellness experts on hot topics that directly impact you. I've made it my mission to help you by exploding a few myths, presenting you with the facts, and hoping to inspire you to be a healthy, strong person just like me. If you like this show, please subscribe and leave a review. Then go and tell your friends, and then go and tell your husband, and then tell the neighbor, and then don't forget to visit me at fitandchips.com. And now let's get started on today's show.
Hi everyone, welcome back to this week's episode of Fit and Chips Chats. Hi, Amanda Thebe here. I'm today speaking to Courtney Townley. Welcome to the show, my dear.
Thanks so much for having me, Amanda. It's such an honor to be here.
We've been having tons of conversations ourselves, just chatting, and then I've been on Courtney's podcast, and I love what she does. She loves what I do. We have an alignment there. So let me just quickly tell you a little bit about Courtney and why she's on the show today. She's like an industry veteran like me, like 20 years in this business, and she's seen it all, done it all as well. But she's now on a mission to sort of deliver a really strong message to women to help them with like self-leadership and help them through the health and wellness so that there is ultimately happiness at the end. Her website is called Grace and Grit, which I love because we all need a little bit of both of those things, don't you think? And so she comes from a philosophy that you need both and grit to grace and grit to live this healthful life. And so we're going to talk about self-discipline and self-leadership and self-love in the show today. She's not woo-woo and fluffy, by the way. Like Courtney just tells it like it is. She really delivers some thoughtful messages that are actionable and you can really make a difference in your life with. So welcome to the show, Courtney. I'm excited to get stuck in today.
Yes, me too.
So where to start? There's so much to talk about.
I know.
But you know, I actually think that what I said in the beginning is probably a great place to dig deep. And this is this self-compassion, self-discipline, and why they're imperative to this, you call it deep health. Mm-hmm. So can you sort of like tell me a little bit more about that and about your philosophy, please.
Yeah. So I, at this kind of stage in my career, I really help women all over the world to take better care of themselves with more consistency and ease. And that requires a hefty dose of both grace and grit. And so what I mean by grace and grit is that, you know, we need self-compassion. We need self-respect. We need to give ourselves sort of kindness and permission to back off on occasion, because sometimes that's the healthiest decision. We need to forgive ourselves for mistakes and for not doing things perfectly. And at the same time, we need a hefty dose of self-discipline to show up and do the work that needs to be done to move our life in a forward direction. And so it's really not an either or conversation. It's finding the balance between the two. And I know you've seen these women. I certainly have. I've worked with women in my career who have kind of used self-compassion to the point of never doing any work, right? Like they almost use it as rationalization for not showing up for themselves. And then I see other women using self-discipline to the point of self-destruction.
That's so funny. That's exactly what I see as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So living at either end of the spectrum is not healthy, but living somewhere in the middle ground, which is a place that only you can find. Nobody can tell you exactly how much grace and exactly how much grit you need. That is your work, and only you can decide that and discover that.
I know Jennifer Campbell of Balance 365, those ladies, she calls it like living in the messy middle.
And yeah,
it's exactly what that is. That's where most of the action happens in life, in the gray zone, you know, like not in the black and white. And
yes.
I also think it's where the magic happens as well, because you find your groove and you find what really works for you. And I really like what you said there, though, if I can just go back to that where you said, you know, you see women who emphasize self-compassion, but it actually stops them going ahead and it stops them wanting to be better and healthier. And it's, unfortunately, we've been a bit honest here, but it's the truth, right? And it's almost like they just need that little nudge to push them forward into that messy middle almost. But, and then on the flip side, I mean, I attract people that are similar to me. So those that have got like a really good ethic towards exercise and nutrition, but it's like, when do you pull back? You know, yeah. I hear that and I'm like, I'm exercising like 6, 7, 8 times a week and nothing's working and I'm stuck. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like pull the reins on that horse a little bit.
Yeah. And the thing, I think the tricky part for women is that space, that fine balance between grace and grit is always changing. You know, because the demands of life are always changing and the stressors that are coming into our life are always changing. And so we can't just have one way of taking care of ourselves forevermore and expect that that's always going to work. And of course, this is very relevant to your population, right? Talking about menopause and perimenopause, there's so much shifting at that age and stage of life that if you're trying to take care of yourself in your 40s, 50s, and 60s, like you did in your 20s, you're going to have some serious problems.
Yeah. And I mean, and it's like you say, it shifts all the time and it can shift from hour to hour, from day
exactly.
to day, from week to week.
Yes.
So women are like, well, I'm doing this and it's really working for me. And then they have a bad week and they feel full of gloom and despair. And I had an incident that happened to me last weekend, sorry, 2 weeks ago, where, you know, things have calmed down for me a little bit and I'm finding more balance throughout my hormonal landscape. You know, that's just the worst of it's over, I feel. But I had a bad week 2 weeks ago where it was bleak. You know, I went in a place where I was like sad. I felt depressed. I had chronic fatigue. It never lifted. It didn't matter how much I slept, how much I rested, how much active rest I did, like walking. And I just was like, holy shit, I'm going back into the place I went before. And then I sort of like sat down and I just was like, you know what? You're not. Like, you've got to remember that these fluctuations are going to happen. And sometimes you've got to roll with it a little bit because you know you're going to come out the other side of it. You've got to be, this is when the self-compassion and self-kindness comes in. Respect what's happening with your body right now because, you know, guess what? You're going to be fine. And guess what? I was like, I don't know, something happened one Saturday. I woke up and I went, oh yeah, I don't feel shit anymore. Carry on as before. And so it might be confusing and it might require a little bit of like jiggery pokery, but guess what? It's going to be different for you, is it, than it is for your friend who like is going through the same thing.
Well, and I think you just nailed it on the head. Like, you have to be willing to step into the arena with experimentation. Because you're not always going to know what the next right move is. But if you're willing to actually make a decision and move in a direction, that will give you information about whether or not it's the right direction. And you can always make a different decision if it proves to be the not, you know, not the right decision.
Use your experiences for information gathering. That's a really great lesson, Courtney. Yeah, thanks.
I love that. And the other thing that you kind of spoke to that I just want to highlight that I think is so important is I'm a big proponent of asking myself really powerful questions. And I teach my clients to do this as well. And one of the questions that I love asking myself, and I encourage my clients to ask themselves, is right now, in this moment, what does self-care look like? Because it probably doesn't look like what self-care looked like yesterday at the same time. Maybe it does, but often it doesn't. And being willing to check in with yourself and just ask that question, what does self-care look like right now? So you mentioned a couple of weeks ago, you were going through a rough patch and you were just, you know, sort of physically and psychologically in a different place than you normally are. That space requires a different level of self-care than when you feel like you're totally on your game.
Yeah.
And if you're unwilling to honor that, we make ourselves suffer so unnecessarily. And so a lot of our suffering becomes our own doing.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's so great. It's just such a good, and it's, we shouldn't have to say, give yourself permission, but honestly,
but
that's what it is. And, you know, one of the things that I talk about with like my clients and just my audience in general is about the need for women to have choice and autonomy in their decisions, right? They need to be able to have the tools in their toolkit to be able to say, this is what's required of me right now. And it takes work and it takes effort, but it should come from them, and it should come from a place of knowing it's going to make them feel better, and not because they've been told to do something, right? It's like feeding them these tidbits of information that actually helps them thrive and grow, right? And I know that that's something you're very keen to sort of share with them, right? But I ask reflective questions, these reflexive questions, though. It's such a great way of doing it.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that really frustrates me about the diet and fitness industries, there's so many things, but one of the things that really bothers me is I feel like we have, like the diet and fitness industries have conditioned women to stop thinking for themselves when it comes to their health. We're always looking outside of us, ourselves, for the answers. We're always looking for the program or the guru or the supplement that is going to change our life. And it robs us of that ability to ask those good questions, those pointed questions that are actually going to help us unravel the answer, you know, and figure out what the answer is. So I'm a really big proponent of helping women to start becoming more self-directed along their health journey, really listen to their bodies and start making decisions based on their life and their likes and their challenges, rather than just following a plan that worked for somebody else's life.
And also allowing themselves to make mistakes because...
lot of them.
Yeah, and especially in the perimenopause crowd, because I hear this, I get questions like, you know, you're saying that I should honor my body, and if I feel too tired, I should rest because that's what my body's asking me. But then I exercise and then I do too much and then I'm too tired. When do I know when to stop? And I'm just like, you have to find that for yourself, because it looks different in everybody, right? This is what we know happens on a physiological level with the body, but I can't tell you right now exactly why this has happened. And you need to just try and find what works best for you. And I can give examples, and I can give like anecdotal stories about myself, but honestly, it's one of those things where if I hear another woman say the reason that you're feeling like this is because you're not doing intermittent fasting, it's because you're not doing keto,
right?
It's because you're not doing CrossFit, or you know whatever it is, I just want to just say to these people, back off, because what works for you, if it works for you, fine, and be the person that tells people it works for you, but stop saying it's the answer.
Yes.
It's not how it works. And so I use the whole, how's that working for you?
Yes, one of my favorites. Yep. Yeah. How's that working for you? It's such a powerful question. If it's not working for you, be willing to sort of look at other options and try something else on. I love what you said about being willing to step in the messy middle, because I think that many, many women are caught up in this idea of perfection along their journey. If they do everything perfectly, they'll get the results they want. But nobody operates perfectly. Like, that's a human impossibility. So it's an irrational way to start or move through any process. And I love that quote that success is built by stacking failures. That is how we learn. That is how we discover what works for us, by being willing to make a whole lot of mistakes to discover what doesn't work. And a lot of people are just very unwilling to do that work because they think it's a judgment on who they are as a person. Or if they screw up at one thing, it means they're a failure across their whole life. And we just need to take that ideology and throw it in a dumpster and set it on fire.
There's a woman who's coming on the show. I'm recording tomorrow, and her name is Dr. Carol Tavrish. She's actually the co-author of a book called Estrogen Matters, which is sort of, I think, essential reading.
But yes.
She is a professor of social science. I want to make sure I get that right, because she really is. She's a social psychologist.
Okay.
And she wrote a book called Mistakes Were Made But Not By Me. And the essence of the book is that we just don't like saying we've made a mistake. We don't like admitting we've done things wrong. And in the fitness industry, that doesn't work, because one, it's an ever-changing industry and we're discovering new things all the time. So you have to be willing to say, yeah, I did that shit back in the 80s and I shouldn't have done it. I did that in the 90s and I sort of regret it. And I've said it a few times, and you know, we're both followers of like similar methodologies. Like one of precision nutrition, and they've changed their view on things a lot because of the new science that comes up, and they're not afraid to say it with their massive audience. And so for you to be able to put your hand up and go, I made a mistake, I shouldn't have said that, is really important. Or I made a mistake and I'm going to learn from that. Or I made a mistake and this is what I'm going to try differently. Like, how can you reframe what's happened and do it differently next time?
Yeah. And not let it define you. Don't let your mistakes define you. And I love what you just said about you and I both have traveled in this industry for so long. We have had the opportunity to make a lot of mistakes. And I look back on my journey through the industry and it's such a gift because I would have never arrived into the place of the work I'm doing now had I not done it wrong for so many years.
I think one of those things is how I speak to myself and how I talk to myself and how that translates over to other people. I mean, I remember I'm going off on a bit of a Tommy tangent here, but you know, I've never been somebody that I'm not huge, I'm not very big, but I'm not skinny either. I've got shape, I'm strong. But I always was a little bit like embarrassed about my legs, right? And I remember like not wearing shorts because I thought everyone would be like looking at my cellulite or looking at my legs and talking to them instead of talking to me. And it would be a distraction. And I never even realized that that was a thing. That, you know, like that was something, because this is like way back in the 80s and 90s when body dysmorphia was never discussed.
Sure.
I remember going out with a group of friends and we were in Miami and I went to try on a pair about 10, 15 years ago and I tried on a pair of skinny jeans and I was like, oh my God, I've never worn skinny jeans before because they probably just make my legs look really fat. And then one of my friends said, oh God, Amanda, would you just stop? You're always going on like this. Look at you. You look great. And why shouldn't you wear them anyway? You don't need permission. And I just was like, wow, that's the message I'm sending out. And I never even realized. Doing it. And so for me, that actually was a real pivotal like tipping point for me, because I just thought that cannot be the way that I talk. And it actually set me on a really great path to just reframe in every single way I talk to my clients. And of course, I'm in shorts all the time now, and fuck anyone who doesn't like it, I don't care. But like, it was really good for me to be able to realize that words matter, especially in this industry and especially with the type of clients that we have who are coming to us for help and for real tangible ways to promote like that. You say
absolutely
deep health.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. I love that story. And it is. I mean, you could have taken that feedback from your friend and gotten really defensive about it, or there's so many other ways you could have handled it that would not have been very nourishing to you. But you did decide in that moment to turn it into something that, you know, really became your calling. You know, I mean, it helped to forge your message and stand for women and help women communicate more sensibly about their relationship with their bodies.
Yeah, so, and I bought the skinny jeans, so there. So that's a good idea.
Exactly. Exactly. And I hear women, women come to me all the time and say, oh, you know, I've done 500 different diets and they're in this space of self-loathing because they feel like they have failed at so many things. And really in that moment, I try to flip it around and just say, isn't it awesome that you know what doesn't work? Like, we know so much about what doesn't work for you. So that's great. So now what might we try?
Yeah.
And it's just kind of looking at it through a lens of possibility rather than something that you should be shamed about, because no, you've just learned a lot about what doesn't work.
Yeah. And you know, I'd like to sort of like quickly talk about I've loved what's happened recently because of the Nike ad. So yes. Sorry, the Nike movement. So if anyone's not sure what I'm talking about, Nike have created some mannequins in their store that sort of cover all body shapes and sizes, and it's wonderful. And what happened is the Telegraph in the UK wrote this scathing article about this with Nike and basically fat shamed everybody. It was disgusting. It was actually one of the most awful articles I've ever read. But oh my God, the strength of women and the force of women behind it that called out this article.
Yes.
And it was absolutely wonderful. And it was a really great way to show how you can just flip such a negative, vile article and a message that's bigoted and ignorant and flip it to just show the positives of, like, you know, just because these women are larger, it doesn't mean they're not healthy. And it made me so proud. And I think that that's a great example of you know, the lens of possibility. They're like looking at things through a different lens.
And it's a part of life. And I think that's something that I think it's so important for women to understand, that life is not all feel good. Like, it's very normal in the human experience to feel a lot of hard things, to feel sadness and disappointment and frustration. And I feel like we've kind of become a culture that's so hyped up on happiness all the time. We're always supposed to be happy, that women feel really shameful when they're feeling anything but. And this largely speaks to the perimenopause and menopause population, that we really kind of unnecessarily beat ourselves up when we're having a rough day. And it's like, you know, my opinion is, what if you could move yourself into a space where you just accept the full spectrum of human emotion and stop expecting that it's supposed to look like butterflies and rainbows all the time?
That's a brilliant quote. And we're going to just take a small break there. And when we come back, Courtney, I'd love to speak to you about behaviors and how to build consistency around behaviors, because I think that that is obviously key to promoting good health.
Hi guys, Amanda here. I'm just jumping in to ask you a quick favor. If you are enjoying my podcast, then I'd love you to leave me a review on either iTunes or Google Play. It helps me get in front of new listeners so I can keep making great content for you. And in return, I'd like to send you my Abs on Fire 12-week core-focused workout plan. All you need to do after you've done your review is simply email me at amanda@fitandchips.com and I'll send you the program straight away. Thanks, guys, for all your support. And now back to the show.
Okay, so welcome back. So can we go into behaviors, habits, and how that can help promote good health? It's the way I coach my clients. I know it's the way that you coach your clients. There's a ton of research behind motivational behaviors, behind creating habits. And so I'd love to know how that looks for you, for your clients.
Yeah, I love that question. So I, at the most fundamental level, it really looks like four stages for my clients. The first stage is, in order for a person to change their behavior, they need to become hyper aware of what they're even doing. You know, they need to have a high level of self-awareness. And quite frankly, the way at which most people are living their life, fast and furious, so many to-dos, you know, constantly working, a lot of people do not have the time and space in their life to be self-aware. They have no practices to develop self-awareness. And so that's really a starting place for me, is I start helping clients to become sometimes painfully self-aware. And I say painfully because we don't always like what we see, which is often why we don't take the time to do the work. Because when you lift up the rug and look at the dirt under the rug, you have an option. You can put the rug back down, but that doesn't take care of the problem. It's still there. Or you can start leaning into the work of cleaning it up. Yeah. And that's kind of how I always use that analogy with self-awareness, because I do think it can be difficult to look at the behaviors that we've been engaging with for years that aren't really serving the life we say we want to live.
And it's a really great analogy, Courtney. And I also just want to add to that, that I see this all the time. There's a reluctance for change because I think being completely honest with ourselves is a difficult exercise to do.
Ooh, it really is.
It's uncomfortable, but I think learning to be uncomfortable with yourself is essential, even if you don't like it or not. I mean, it's clearly you need something to change because what you're doing isn't working for you. And so that, I think, and people fall back on consistent habits because they can't get past this, like, honesty stage. That can't,
sure.
They put the rug back down, like you said.
Well, and I think the reason they do that, the number one reason they do it, is because they don't have a practice of self-compassion. And so they're looking at the dirt and they're using it as an exercise in shame and guilt and feeling bad about themselves and marinating in all these stories from their past, you know, from their history that aren't serving them. And that's really where self-compassion and grace comes in, that when we lift up the rug to look at the dirt, we need to be incredibly kind and honor that we are human and life is messy and there's nothing wrong with you because you have this dirt under the rug. Everybody has it. So let's just look at it. Let's unpack it and let's start cleaning it up. And that in itself is a skill set. So we start with self-awareness. And then from there, I move clients into the practice of organization. Because I find that, you know, we hear about like the detriment that clutter has in people's lives in terms of physical clutter, like having a messy house and having a really messy desk, it wears on your psyche. But I believe like two of the biggest things that are wearing people down is lifestyle clutter and mental clutter. We have not built systems and practices for clearing out the mental clutter and for clearing out the lifestyle clutter. And what do I mean by lifestyle clutter? I mean, a lot of people have a habit of procrastinating or not setting boundaries or staying up too late at night. Or, you know, you can name any one of so many lifestyle behaviors that are not serving them. And that's what I call lifestyle clutter. And in order to change behavior, you need to have a plan for how the hell you're going to do that. You can't just expect that you're going to wake up tomorrow morning and because you had a little squirt of inspiration, all of a sudden now you're going to change your life. It's not really how it works. Like you have to have a game plan for how you're going to show up every single day so you can start being consistent with a new behavior.
Yeah.
So organization is really, really necessary. Not so fun, but this is what I tell people because a lot of clients will say to me, I don't have time to organize myself. And I'll argue with them and say, but what you're telling me is that you do have time to feel regretful and resentful and sick and frustrated because you aren't able to turn your health around. So you are making time. It's just we have to use the time on the front end so we can prevent all that frustration and illness from happening.
Plus, you're going to just default otherwise back to those.
Exactly.
Old behaviors, right? So, and that's what we're trying to do. And behavioral change is quick. And it isn't easy. And
no.
And it needs persistence, right?
And you have to recommit to it every day. It's not like you just commit on January 1st and you're going to be inspired for 365 days a year. We all know that's not how it works. You have to recommit every single day, sometimes every single hour, and remind yourself why you're willing to show up to change these behaviors. Because the way, you know, neurology works, you have been practicing certain behaviors that aren't serving you for so long. They're like super highways in your brain. That message, that translation from, you know, in behavior happens so quickly that you don't have to think about it. It's your brain's way of conserving energy. You just act without thinking. But that is not how we create meaningful and fulfilling lives. We have to think before we act. And that requires organization.
Yeah.
So we go from self-awareness to organization. And then I really work on the practice of follow through because let's face it, like people can be really self-aware. They could have the best laid plans. And then they consistently negotiate, compromise, and rationalize their way out of doing the work.
Mm, oh my God, you could be talking about my son. That's true though, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
What are the reasons I don't want to do this? Right?
They're like, yeah, I don't want to do it, or something else is more important, or I just don't feel like doing it. So this is where a lot of mindset work comes in. I work a lot with my clients around, you know, they're thinking about the behaviors that they want to be engaging with to change their life. Because if they tell me something's important to them and then they consistently don't show up, to me, that's indicative that their thinking is getting in the way, which is why they're not following through. So I work a lot around mindset with the client. And then finally, the fourth step is teaching them practices of realignment because life, as we all know, is going to throw us a lot of curveballs, things that we never could have seen coming. We get ill, we have to have a surgery, there's a death in the family, we have to travel for business, we have in-laws coming for 3 months. There are so many things in life that are going to throw you out of alignment with your process. And if you do not have strategies and plans for how to quickly realign yourself, you could stay misaligned for decades. I've seen women do it. I've seen women live their whole life misaligned because they simply don't have like simple ways to redirect their attention back to the life they said they wanted to live.
Yeah, like to the values and to the to their purpose, right?
Exactly. And so,
yeah, it's how you get there can shift, but the end goal can ultimately be the same as long as it aligns with what you want, like you say, your life to look like.
Exactly. And one of the things, you know, I tell clients a lot is you can't realign yourself unless you're really clear on what misalignment looks like for you. And that goes back to what we talked about initially, the self-awareness. A lot of people say that they know what they want for their life, you know, in terms of improved health, but they aren't necessarily all that great at identifying when they're misaligned. For me, I'm misaligned when I'm super reactive, when I feel really overwhelmed, when I feel like I'm tired all the time. Like I know what the red flags are in my life that tell me I'm misaligned. And I use them as kind of a cue that I need to pivot myself back. I need to take a couple minutes out. I need to organize myself, get my head on straight, remind myself of my values, and remember what my anchors are. What are the habits that I do on a regular basis, the behaviors that help me to feel aligned? And I'll tell you, my biggest one is sleep.
Yeah. Most
I got to sleep.
Sleep and stress. Yeah. Stress management. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing is, you know, for me, a big anchor is organizing my day to be lived in a way that I can go to bed at night feeling really good about how I took care of myself and how I showed up in the world. And I cannot just do that if I'm winging it. I, after all these years of practice, I can't do it without winging it. I might be able to do it for a day or two. But if I continue not to organize myself, it just becomes it's like quicksand.
Yeah.
I just start to lose myself in it.
And so what about those clients or those women who will say, I'm doing everything you're telling me to do, I'm doing and nothing's changing. Like I'm eating well, I'm exercising, I'm doing this, but I'm not seeing any change. How do you, but we know change is happening, whether they can see it or not.
Yeah, sure.
How do you like, console them, but how do you reframe that so that they still feel like the journey is worthwhile, that what they're doing is actually going to promote change?
Yeah. So two things. First of all, I'd ask really, like nothing's working. Like you're not feeling better in any way. You know, just really kind of get them to look at, because here's what I find, Amanda, is that a lot of women will come to me saying, I want to feel better. I want to get stronger. I want to feel like I'm showing up for my life more fully. And then the only measure they're using as progress is the damn scale.
Yeah.
And it's like, hang on a second. The way you are measuring progress is completely misaligned with what this is really about for you. So I usually have them take a really good look at what this is really about for them. And make sure that we are using progression measurements that are absolutely in line with that. Do you really not feel like your energy is improving? You just told me that you're sleeping better at night. Does that count for nothing? You know, your bloating after every meal has gone away. Why aren't we paying attention to that?
Yeah.
So I try to point out the small things that they're dismissing that are actually really big things.
And even things that aren't like visible, but like are happening, like improved relationships,
right?
Confidence at work and just the ability to just actually take more things on because they're feeling less overwhelmed. I think those type of things as well are often pushed aside as not important, but they are like they're quality of life items that can literally change the way your day goes, you know, like in your life goes in general. And so, yeah, it's really hard for when you're in the thick of it to look at those as positive aspects, but they count. So yeah, I'm constantly reminding like my clients, you know, this is working for you. Look at the way that you're talking to yourself. Look at the way you're dealing with the thought monsters.
Yeah.
Look at the way you're handling stress and colleagues at work. Look at the way you're planning for your evening meals and you're sitting down with your husband and talking and being happy and relaxed. All of those things matter in the big scheme of
They really do. I don't know if you read James Clear's book, Atomic Habits. I definitely recommend it to, you know, anyone listening if you're interested in behavior change. It's a brilliant book. But he talks about the difference between an outcome goal, which is like weight loss, right? Versus a becoming goal. And here's the difference. There's a difference between reading a book, like one book, versus becoming a reader. There's a difference between running a marathon versus becoming a runner. And the way that I like to say it to my clients, there's a big difference between weight loss and becoming a woman who respects the needs of her mind, body, and soul.
Yeah, exactly.
So if we could, and this I find is, you know, I look at this as one of my jobs as a coach, is I really encourage my clients to look at who they're becoming rather than just the mile markers they're meeting along the way, which like weight loss is one of. If you're becoming a woman who regularly addresses the needs of her mind, body, and soul, I'm pretty sure that some weight loss, if you need to lose weight, is going to be a byproduct of that. But it's not the goal. It's just a byproduct. The goal is to become someone that you really feel in line with.
Yeah, and are proud of. And I wish women were more, like it makes me so sad when I listen to the way they talk about themselves when nobody else around them feels that way. And so, yeah, and if we can change that conversation one habit at a time, that's awesome.
And that's what we're doing, right? You and I, like we're out in the world, like just trying to have this really important conversation and hoping that eventually it catches like wildfire, but we're also fighting and we're working against a culture that has been thinking it the opposite way for decades.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be a slow shift, but it's a shift worth making for sure.
Definitely is. And I think that's a wonderful place to end, Courtney. I really enjoyed our conversation. You're amazing. I'm going to put Courtney's information in the show notes so you can follow her along with her work. But she's very inspiring. All of the stuff she puts on Instagram, social media, and on her Facebook and her website are amazing. So I highly recommend you go and follow her. And thank you so very much for coming to chat with me today.
Oh, thank you. It's such a pleasure.
Take care. Bye for now.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the show. For more information on my services, head over to my website at fitandchips.com. That's like fish and chips, FITNCHIPS.com. Or you can head over to my Fit and Chips Facebook page too. If you leave me a comment or if you contact me, I promise I'll do my best to respond to all of your questions. The views and advice expressed by myself in this show are not a substitute for conventional medical service. No information here should be interpreted as a medical diagnosis, treatment, or prevention of any disease. If in any doubt, always go straight to your doctor. Take care. Love you. Bye.